Could we turn to a few verses at the end of the book of 2 Kings? 2 Kings chapter 23. I'd like to notice several things in this chapter, and then one in another chapter, four different things. Two that are a tremendous encouragement, and two that are a warning. And both of them occur in connection with one of the godliest kings in the latter part of Israel's history, King Josiah. And we know that Josiah came to the throne as a very, well, I was going to say a young man, but we would hardly even call him that, because 8 years of age, we would call him just a boy. But we find that he had a heart for the Lord in spite of the fact that he had an ungodly father and a most ungodly grandfather. However, the Lord worked in his heart, and there was a real desire to please the Lord, so that there are things in his life that are exemplary. But there are also some warnings. I suggest that there is a parallel for you and me in the last days of this time of God's grace. Because Josiah lived, as we know, right at the end of Israel's history as a sovereign nation. By the time he came to the throne, the 10 tribes had already been carried into captivity. Josiah was right at the end, just before the kingdom of Judah was finally carried away into captivity by the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar. But we find here that there was a wonderful opportunity given to him, and yet there were some warnings. You and I are living at the end of the dispensation of grace, if we could use that expression. We are just at the point where the Lord is going to call us home. And like the dispensation of law, where Israel was, so we have been a failure. As far as what man has had committed to him, Israel failed, and the church has failed. But that doesn't take away from the wonderful privilege of individual faithfulness at any time in the history. And we find here that Josiah, as we said earlier, was exemplary in his faithfulness. Let's notice a couple of things. 2 Kings 23 and verse 21. And the king commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover unto the Lord your God, as it is written in the book of this covenant. Now notice this. Surely there was not holden such a Passover from the days of the judges that judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor of the kings of Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, wherein this Passover was holden to the Lord in Jerusalem. Imagine, our brother Don has been talking about worship. And it's a wonderful privilege to worship. I suppose at no other time are our hearts so filled with worship as they are when we come together to remember the Lord. And the remembrance of the Lord, as we know, is the counterpart of the Passover in the Old Testament. In fact, it tells us, I think it's in 1 Corinthians 5, even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. In Luke 22, a chapter from which we read this morning. The Passover is connected with the remembrance of the Lord. And here Josiah keeps a Passover. Oh, no doubt there were not the things that had attended Passovers in the past. There was not the kind of glory and majesty. There were not the numbers of sacrifices that had existed, for example, in the days of Solomon and David. But what does the Spirit of God say about that Passover? Oh, it says, no such Passover from the days of the judges, all the way back to the days of the judges, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor of the kings of Judah. Oh, beloved brethren, if the church is in ruins as far as man's responsibility is concerned, God looks at individual faithfulness and it shines out more brightly. And here the eye of God rests on that Passover and says there was none like it going all the way back to the judges. Not in the days of those kings, and there were godly kings in Israel such as Hezekiah, Jehoshaphat, Asa, and so on, going back to David and Solomon and then to the days of the judges. But oh, the eye of God looks down and sees that Passover. And there was that which characterized it, which was so pleasing to the eye of God that he says, there was nothing like it. Right at the end, when failure had come in, right at the end when God was going to allow them to be carried away into captivity, and he had said so. He had said so. They had found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And when they read it, Josiah had rent his clothes. And they went to Huldah, the prophetess, you'll remember, and said, what are we to do? And she had told them, Hezekiah, the judgment is coming on Israel. God isn't going to take it away. But because your heart was tender, because you sought the Lord, it's not going to happen in your day. And you know, isn't that beautiful? God has given you and me that same promise that the judgment that is coming on this world is not going to come until you and I are called home. What a wonderful encouragement. But then notice verse 25, another wonderful encouragement. 2 Kings 23:25. And like unto him, that is Josiah, was there no king before him that turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses? Neither after him arose there any like him. There had been godly kings like Hezekiah that had turned to the Lord in the midst of idolatry and ruin, and God had blessed them. There had been others further back who had been wonderful in their conduct in the way that they had followed the Lord. But here was a man who arose under difficult circumstances. He could have said, what's the use? He could have looked back on well over 50 years of idolatrous reign by his father and his grandfather and said, it's all over with. Look at the house of the Lord, and the whole land is filled with idols, and everybody has gone that way, and the Lord has pronounced judgment. There's no point. It's all done for. But he didn't talk like that. Notice the number of times in this 25th verse that the word all appears. All his heart, all his soul, all his might, all the law of Moses. Oh, beloved brethren, everything that God has given in this precious book has its present application and enjoyment today. It is not something that we have to say, well, that might have been all right 50, 100, 150 years ago. It might have worked all right back in the early days of the church, but it doesn't work today. No, we find that the Spirit of God specifically identifies, and a young man at that, in the 18th year of his reign was this Passover kept. How old was he then? Well, if he began to reign when he was 26, that means he was only, or rather, when he was 8 years old, that means he was only 26. A challenge to the young men and to the young women today. Turn to the Lord, it says, with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses. And the Spirit of God recognizes it and blesses it. Two wonderful encouragements. But then two warnings. And they're serious warnings. And as they were true in the days of Hezekiah, so they are true for you and me today. And the one of them is found in the very next verse, verse 26. Notwithstanding, the Lord turned not from the fierceness of his great wrath, wherewith his anger was kindled against Judah, because of all the provocations that Manasseh, that would be Josiah's grandfather, had provoked him withal. And the Lord said, I will remove Judah also out of my sight as I have removed Israel, and will cast off this city Jerusalem which I have chosen, and the house of which I said, my name shall be there. Oh, the judgment had been pronounced, and God was not going to turn things around. God was not going to take that judgment and say, well, I won't do it. He might suspend it for a time, as he told Josiah, it won't happen in your day. But God turned not away, it says, from the fierceness of his great wrath. It's a warning for you and me, because, you know, when man, and he has always done this in any time of God's dealings with him, is a failure in what God has committed to him, God never restores things to what they were at the beginning. No, he provides a way for faithfulness in spite of the ruin, but he doesn't turn back the clock. And God didn't take away the judgment that was going to fall on Israel, and God is not going to take away that the judgment that is going to fall on Christendom for having given up the knowledge of God. We hear today, and particularly in North America, how we need to turn back to the Lord. That call has gone on for a good many years. I can remember reading about how a man made a comment, something to this effect, and it was probably, it had to be well over 100 years ago. And he said, if we don't turn back to Paul's doctrine, if we don't turn back to Paul's doctrine and get right with God in that way, it is going to be a pathway down, down, down to destruction. That was a man, a believer, by the name of Patton, who was, I believe, president of Princeton University back about 1900 or shortly after that. Men recognized the decline, but they were powerless to stop it. Now, does that mean that we just are indifferent to it? Oh, my, no. But it means that we don't expect that which God has told us is not going to happen. It means that we don't expect that which is not intelligent for us to expect. And in seeing what God has written in His Word, we find that Paul the Apostle said, "After my departure, grievous wolves shall enter in among you, not sparing the flock. And of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things," and so on. No, the ruin of the church was predicted right from the beginning. God isn't going to turn back. Also, we have mainly the history of the two tribes, and only the 10 tribes brought in to round out the history. Because in Chronicles, you get more God's sovereignty. In Chronicles, you get God's purposes, in spite of the failure, in spite of the difficulty, in spite of the problems. So that God, in spite of man's failure, is going to work out His purposes. But notice here in 2 Chronicles 35 and verse 20. And to me, this is one of the saddest expressions in connection with Josiah. Because once again, in the 19th verse of chapter 35, it says, "In the 18th year of the reign of Josiah was this Passover kept." And in the previous verse, it says essentially what we have read in 2 Kings, that there was no Passover like that since the days of Samuel the prophet. But then we have three words at the beginning of verse 20 that say it all. After all this. After all this. After a wonderful recovery. After the most wonderful blessing. After the Lord had allowed them to find the book of the law. After there had been the turning back to the Lord by Josiah with all his heart, all his soul, all his might. After there had been that wonderful Passover, none like it since the days of Samuel. After there had been the destruction of all of those idols that had plagued the land in some cases, going all the way back to the time of Solomon. There were some things there that even godly kings like Hezekiah had not destroyed and taken out of the way. But Josiah sees to it that they are removed, broken up, smashed up, gotten rid of. After all this, what happens? Verse 20, "When Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, king of Egypt, came up to fight against Carchemish by Euphrates. And Josiah went out against him. But he sent ambassadors to him, saying, 'What have I to do with thee, thou king of Judah? I come not against thee this day, but against the house wherewith I have war. For God commanded me to make haste. Forbear thee from meddling with God, who is with me, that he destroy thee not.' Nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself, that he might fight with him, and hearken not unto the words of Necho from the mouth of God, and came to fight in the valley of Megiddo. And the archers shot at King Josiah, and the king said to his servants, 'Have me away, for I am sore wounded.' His servants therefore took him out of that chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died and was buried in one of the sepulchres of his fathers. And all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. And Jeremiah lamented for Josiah, and all the singing men and the singing women spake of Josiah in their lamentations to this day." And so on. Oh, how sad. What happened? Where did things go wrong? You know, there's a gap here in Josiah's life. Because if this Passover was kept in the 18th year of his reign, that would make him 26. And we know from other scriptures that he died at the age of 39. So there's a gap of 13 years in his life that is passed over in silence. And we don't want to try and read into Scripture what isn't there. But I believe we can gather from what takes place here from verse 20 on is that Poor Josiah, if we could use the expression, got too big for his boots. He wanted to try and restore the days of glory. After all, what was the king of Egypt doing coming right across through the land of Israel, through the valley of Megiddo, and over there to the east to the Euphrates River to fight with this man, Carchemish? Josiah says, hey, I ought to be master of this territory. I ought to be running the show. And he wasn't content to recognize that failure had come in. And so he goes out to fight in spite of the fact that the king of Egypt says, Josiah, I have no problem with you. I'm not coming against you. He says, the Lord has sent me. What? The Lord sent the king of Egypt? Yes, yes. The Lord raises up the world sometimes to look after his interests, because you and I have been failures. And we'd better recognize it. We'd better recognize it. And if the Lord is using someone, it ought to humble us to think, yes, we ought to be able to deal with the situation. It wouldn't have happened in the days of David. No, David would have gone out, and it says he reigned over the whole territory, all the way to the Euphrates River. There was no way in the days of David that the king of Egypt would have marched through to settle difficulties way over on the east side of the land of Israel. But times had changed. And Josiah should have recognized that and been content with the wonderful blessing. You know, there is a danger, and I speak to my own heart in these last days, of pride arising up in our hearts, of thinking we're somebody's, of thinking that because God has granted a revival and God has given us back that precious truth that at least in an outward way was lost for centuries, and God has given us the privilege once more of gathering to the Lord's name, given us the privilege that we had this morning of breaking bread on the ground of the one body, given us the privilege of going back to His precious Word, to see those precious truths that God gave at the beginning, and to live in and rejoice in the good of them, to worship together as our brother Don Hinesley was bringing out. Is the Spirit of God going to have to say of you and me, after all this, are we going to be lifted up in pride and say, well, in that case, we're going to restore things? I've mentioned this character before, but most of you young people that have studied history will recognize the name of a man by the name of Charlemagne. Lived about 700 or 800 years after Christ. And what did he try and do? I remember writing an examination in history in university, and one of the questions was, discuss the question, Charlemagne, Roman emperor or Frankish king? Why? Because Charlemagne tried to restore the glory of the Roman Empire, and he compelled the Pope to crown him Holy Roman Emperor. But was he a Holy Roman Emperor? He did a lot of good. Established a lot of schools, did a lot of good things administratively. But did he restore the Roman Empire? No. He was really, and always was, a Frankish king. That's what he was. He was not restoring the glory of the Caesars, the glory of Rome. And he was only pretending to do it when he tried to make it out that he was. And he only fooled himself. And you know, there is a danger in your heart and mine of thinking that we can restore something that God hasn't told us to restore. But the wonderful thing is that we can live and walk in the good of what He has given us. We don't need to be like Josiah. We don't need to fall on the battlefield. He was no use after that. He fell on the battlefield, and he was gone. They lamented over him. You can imagine poor Jeremiah. What an encouragement it must have been to see that godly king, and then to see him fall when he was still a relatively young man, to see him go out and meddle in something that he had no business meddling in, instead of being content to fill the role that God had given him. Well, I want to leave room for somebody else. But may the Lord, on the one hand, encourage our hearts by this example in Josiah, who on the one hand turned to the Lord with all his heart, and who as a result kept a Passover such as the Spirit of God says, there had been no Passover like it since the days of Samuel. But on the other hand, let's recognize God wasn't going to turn away from what he had said he was going to do in judgment, nor is he going to do it today. And let's be content that the Spirit of God doesn't have to rebuke us for pretending to be what we're not and pretending to take that in an outward position that is not due to us in this day and age. Let's be content simply to walk before the Lord as those who have been granted through wondrous grace the privilege of walking in what God gave at the beginning, but recognizing the failure of the church. Just one quotation. This is J.N. Darby. Wherever there is an attempt at the outward display of the position and the unity, there will be nothing but a mess and a failure. God will not take that place with us. In order to have his strength, we must be in the place of his mind, and that is in the recognition of the ruin of the church. Once that is recognized, there can be no limit to the blessing that God will give. But let us recognize where we are and what God is doing.